Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. More than 30 years ago, David Sheffield attended a potluck dinner at Greenwood Towers in Port Hope. The meal changed his life. He went on to create the Greenwood Coalition, a nonprofit aimed at helping those who lived on the margins in the community. Slowly, it would gain attention. There would be challenges, but also successes. In this interview, Sheffield will explain why he stepped down, the state of the organization, plus his own reflection on the past and also his future. Listen and see if you agree with his assessment. I am so pleased to have with me today David Sheffield, the former executive director of the Greenwood Coalition. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Rob. It's nice to be back talking to you again.
I understand Greenwood Coalition has undertaken an organizational restructuring that was overseen by an interim board of directors. Why was that necessary?
The short answer is everything has changed around us. Changed within us too, I think. But the post-pandemic unfolding of things in the community has been challenging in many ways, and that was that came home to us for a bunch of folks that are well embedded in the community, and for staff, but also for volunteers, volunteer board members, that kind of thing. It's been a challenging time. The pandemic was one kind of challenge, and beyond, as we kind of look for our grounding again, it's been challenging. And so we really started this in 2023, last summer, looking at what does Greenwood look like after the pandemic? What are the priorities? And then with changes in personnel and that sort of thing, we really had to get to that in these recent months.
When the pandemic was on, you received quite a number of grants. You were providing emergency services that helped float your organization financially. What happened after the pandemic that changed, forced you into this position where you were starting to reflect more deeply on the organization itself and how it was functioning?
Yeah, I think the pandemic brought up a couple of things. We were, as Greenwood Coalition staff, were able to, pivot as we said, to doing some different kinds of work. We were definitely out on the street, and a lot of the more formal services were working remotely. And so there was a place for us there, and we had built relationships in the community, and it became a little more challenging to dig into that. During that time, as you said, there was additional funding available, and so we were able to provide some of those services in a way that was different than we had in the past, and that was useful. That was what was needed. But as I said, coming out of the pandemic, a couple of things: that funding that had been there wasn't there in the same way anymore from government services. We've been dependent on donor funding for the whole life of Greenwood. And that was changing and shifting a little bit as well. But we were also looking at that idea of service provision, which is something that we stepped into in a way that wasn't typical for us. And coming out of the pandemic, we realized that if we spent all of our time and energy in service provision, we wouldn't be able to do the things that Greenwood was known for, and the building community and some of the kinds of things that we felt were our best work. And so that's where we were moving back into that. And again, kind of the noise in the community coming out of the pandemic, really shifted how we see each other in a community and where trust is and that kind of thing. So yeah, reflection is a good word for what needed to happen.
Why is there an interim board?
So we had a board significant changeover in the board structure at the last AGM, which was in June of 2023. And then we had a really challenging fall period, and had a board member resign. And by the spring of this year, it was becoming, I think, very difficult to find that kind of work rewarding, and it was exhausting. It was exhausting from the inside and the outside, and so I mean, I think you'd have to talk to the board members that that resigned at that time for their view of it. But essentially, by March, we had. We had the whole board had resigned, and in I guess three different occasions, and so that meant that we had to create a new board. So we reached out to folks that had been past board members, other partner agencies, that kind of thing, to essentially create a bit of a think tank in the interim and figure out what do we need to do here and where do we go. And so that group of people led to a board of seven people who were instated by the members. Greenwood has about 80 formal voting members, and those folks elected this interim board to navigate through this process.
In a notice about this organizational restructuring, it said that the board needed to move because of a weakened financial situation, and you've described what was going on there, but it also mentions things like program cuts and staff hours being reduced. What was that a response to, and how severe was it?
Yeah, that was fairly significant. I guess the reduction in funding, because we had expanded in the second way we had expanded over the past couple of years was into Cobourg in a more substantial way. We'd always had our location in Port Hope right from the beginning, but there was an opportunity to open a storefront in Cobourg, and that was really positive on the one hand, in that a lot of the street level concerns and issues and people were located in Cobourg, but but the controversy was in Cobourg as well, and so that became a challenging piece, but also a financial piece, and so a lot of these things sort of contributed, came together, and made it necessary to reduce staff hours, and then losing a couple of key people, kind of as a result of that, really changed some of what we were able to do. Because Greenwood, I've always said that Greenwood is who showed up, and we look like who showed up and what their gifts were, and so a lot of our strength was built on some very particular people and particular skills. And so with that shifting, we had to look at, okay, what are the things that we who are here are able to do.
The notice also mentions that you are no longer the executive director, and I mentioned this in my introduction, you are the former executive director, saying that you had left the organization as of September 6th. Why is that?
Yeah, so that's why do any of us do anything? A whole set of complex reasons, but I think with this change that has been happening and needs to happen, I think that all of us could see that there's a next chapter ahead for Greenwood Coalition, and either I had to step up and be the person to lead in that and push that vision forward, or I needed to step out of the way and let others do that. And I think for me personally, kind of the exhaustion of the last few years was really adding up, and just a few things that sort of signaled to me that I should move on to something else while this is a good story, while this feels strong, and move on to that, because it has been a good story. It's been I've been involved with this for 17 years. It's been my job for more than 14 years, and that's been a good story. It's been a real gift to me, and I'm thankful for all the parts of that. But when you see these signs of burnout, in yourself and in others around you, you really have to take that seriously and not stick around and cause harm, and take care of yourself. And I think that we're seeing that in a lot of ways, around the community, the where the helpers are exhausted.
Back in May, there was a notification sent out by your organization regarding this new interim board. And I understand, too, at that time that there was an investigation and a third-party report was submitted to the board of directors. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I can't say too much about those internal things, but there were some internal challenges that were unsubstantiated. But regardless of the outcome of some of those kinds of things, you have to go through that and you have to navigate that. And I think that our board did an excellent job with that, and took the high road on things. But there's a cost to, there's a cost to everything, every bit of work that you do. And that was a particular kind of work that needed to be done. And I think we've come out the other side of that, feeling good that we took that seriously, that we did the work, and that we cared for each other during that time.
Did this upheaval impact your decision to step away?
Surprisingly, no, I don't think so. And yeah, you could ask me in 6 months after I've done some processing, maybe I'll see other things. But as late as June, I really felt like I was enthused about what was coming next and what the possibilities were, and that I had the creativity and energy for that. But then I just started seeing signs personally that were actually new, that I hadn't experienced, during that time. And I always kind of, prided myself on sort of, taking care of myself and taking care of the folks that I was working with to get through these difficult things, because I mean, this work is difficult, you have to acknowledge that. Took pride in that, and then, just like I said, some signs that for me personally, I probably didn't have the creativity and energy to do this well, and so I should step out while that's possible. So there, I mean, there was a lot of conversation back and forth between, the board, myself, the staff, and what was best for the organization. But I let them know I was willing if that was a wise move for the organization, and we had to sort through that, and we all kind of came to that conclusion.
What's it like to make a decision like that when you've spent more than 30 years working in community outreach?
I don't know, Rob, really the answer to that question. It's significant. It feels good and right to be at this place at this time. But yeah, it's a big change. I would say, right now, just out of it slightly, it feels like a bit of a weird place. But I live in this community and I've worked in this community and I'm not moving away anywhere, and I'll move on to doing some other things. But my family live in the community, and some of them have been involved in this work and in a lot of ways. And so there's kind of an embeddedness here that I would have to move quite a distance away to completely distance myself. But there's a bit of relief in the work part of leading an organization and that kind of thing. There are a lot of moving parts to that. So I'm not going to miss the having so many moving parts and enjoy seeing people on the street and keeping up those relationships.
How did you get involved in community outreach?
Yeah, well, my wife and I were invited by some folks in Port Hope that had started connecting with people who lived at the Greenwood Tower Inn, and at that time, that address was considered sort of the worst case of poverty in Northumberland County. People were afraid to go there. But some women from the community started hanging out and met some of the other women who lived there and tried to understand a little bit of what was going on. And that led to a potluck dinner that happened every week there. And so in I think it was January of 2007, my wife and I were invited to come along to that dinner. And I think I mean there's reasons why we were there and why we were invited there, but I think that was a significant that very night was a significant movement where we crossed a line, and it wasn't easy to go back. And so over the next couple of years, we did that every week and spent time with folks, and that was just a community initiative of just regular citizens. Government services didn't know what to do about the difficulties there, and in 2009 that property was sold and has significantly changed with a good landlord and taking care of the place and managing properly. And so it's a different kind of community now, but at that time it was essentially what encampments are today. It was the place you went when there was nowhere else to go, and somebody would let you sleep on the floor. And it was and because we were there, it wasn't our place. We weren't in charge of anything, and we were just eating together. And it was really important to us that we weren't serving like a soup kitchen. We all just served ourselves and sat down together. And that building of relationships over food became the foundation of what Greenwood became when it was became an organization.
What did you do before you did that?
For a big chunk of my life, I was a house painter, and I worked around Northumberland County. We moved here in 1986, and I came here for another job at that time. I did a little bit of journalism work at that time at the Coburg Daily Star that first year, and in the there was a big construction boom on, and I had some painting experience, so I did that. And we raised four children here, and I was just yeah, that was the work to do. You go to work and do that, but often on the weekends we were involved with a church, and on weekends there were other community activities. And so we really we're very involved in the community. So this wasn't a sort of a sudden leap from nowhere into this kind of work. But it was a definitely a different experience. My days would have very few people in them. A lot of paint, a lot of walls, a lot of windows. But this work, when I started into it, it became a lot of people, and I had to readjust whether I thought I was introverted or extroverted. Turned out I was a little more introverted than I thought, but it had never been tested.
What were you like as a kid? Were there any signs that this might be your future?
Oh, I don't know. I probably could have been diagnosed with ADHD. Had a lot of interests in a lot of things, but I grew up in a family that was very outward looking. I was born in Northern Ontario and grew up there, and in Eastern Ontario, mostly rural communities. And my parents were gospel people. They were connected to community churches. My father worked as a missionary for a time, and so it was quite normal in our experience to sort of think about people who were struggling in whatever community we were in. My parents did some quite significant things in Northern Ontario that we would consider, today, to, there should be a women's shelter for that, or there should be a, some kind of service for that, but there wasn't. But there were neighbors, and so I grew up seeing that kind of thing, and I grew up in a, a family situation where creativity was encouraged and celebrated. My father played music and still plays music, and taught music for many years, and so the idea of, inventing things and creating things and, doing things, was normal. So I think I had an abnormal upbringing, and so my sense of what's normal and, what one should do, was maybe shaped by that.
When you were starting the Greenwood Coalition, what was the hardest or most challenging part?
So yeah, probably the hardest part was trying not to build an empire. You know what white people do? We have a history of rolling into situations as the helper, and we can fix this, and we can build things, and we have resources, and all of that kind of thing, and we can solve this. And that was certainly my tendency. And over a number of years as an entrepreneur, it's about problem solving. And when we came into the situation, like I said, we joined some women who had made this initiative, and they were doing things in a different way, which was really helpful, which was very, very circular. The problem solving was, well, we'll sit down, preferably around a pizza, and go around the circle until there's consensus on what to do. And often the consensus was, well, there's nothing we can do about that, but we can make a casserole this week and show up. And so that was really useful. And in the particulars of the situation at the motel where all of this started, it was really difficult to fix things, for a variety of reasons, and that was frustrating sometimes. But within a few years, we looked back and we realized, okay, that was probably the best thing. That difficulty, in trying to fix things, was probably the best lesson that we could learn, because it meant that we had to sit there, in a sense, as powerless as some of the folks that were living in serious poverty, and so on. And we felt that powerlessness, but we built this camaraderie and trust with people that would never have happened if we had moved ahead with, well, here's what to do next.
Do you remember any of the first people you helped?
Rob, we were just going to ask questions here, and we weren't going to get emotional. The people that were there in the early days became close friends, and a lot of them have passed. One of the realities of people living in poverty in this country is that their life expectancy is much less than people who aren't living in poverty, and so we've lost a lot of friends. Some really good people, and we had a friend that still lived there who passed away last week, and those folks that were part of the earliest days, because of that close relationship, were those friendships have lasted, and I still see those people, and I expect to see a number of those people on a regular basis.
My condolences on the passing of your friend. When did you get a sense that the organization was having an impact?
I think pretty early on, people, again, because we built close relationships with people and built trust with people, there was a comfort in talking about how things were going for folks. And the only measure I've ever had for, are we having impact? Is this worth doing? Is when, people talk to me and say, hey, here's what's going on. Here's what was going on. Here's what I'm trying to do. Here's what feels better. Thank you for being here. Those relationships that developed, that was the success then. That's the success now. We saw, if you will, the tapestry of a community being woven that was strong, and ultimately, that's our hope, that we have relationships across the community, across socioeconomic lines, that allow us to feel like we all belong and we all have a place, and we have that trust in each other.
What would be some of the accomplishments you have achieved that you would like people to remember?
I think the things that have led to, something transformational for me, first of all, for the people around me, for people who have been struggling. We've always sort of had this idea that we should try to do work that is more transformational than transactional. And so, back to my reference to service provision and that kind of thing, that work tends to be more transactional. And that's what institutions do best. And this work that is relational, I think of art programming that we've done, I could introduce you to a number of people who would say art saved my life, art changed my life, and there are a whole bunch of pieces of that. That whole idea of creating a third space where, if your first place is your home, your second place is your workplace, third places are those places where we meet people of different experience and we're changed because of those encounters. I think that we have promoted that and created that through community dinner, through art programs, that sort of thing. I think Greenwood has been a catalyst for community. We've provoked and modeled and demonstrated how community could be done, how community could be done inexpensively, how you could create a community of belonging. And if I look around at has that had an impact? I can see in some of the formal services things being done in a much different way than they were 10 years ago, I can look around and I can see people who are homeless and struggling at a rate we've never seen before, but I can also see people who have remained housed, who have not fallen into that. And sometimes we don't measure the the quiet successes, but we can draw a picture of that. And so that, I mean, the people are the story, but I think that Greenwood has had an impact on how community and services are done in this area.
What inspires you?
It inspires me. I think I get up to do this kind of work because it's good for me. It's what I need. I need community and connection. I need meaningful work to do. I need a place to belong, and I think that others need that as well. And so I think that yearning that's in me, that I assume is in other people, is a place to start, to get up. And of course, after all these years of doing this work in this way and building the relationships and that kind of thing, I recognize that good work has been done and things have changed and things have gotten better. I've loved this. Up until the decision this summer that it was time for me to end my time. If you had asked me, what would you do if you weren't doing this, I would have said I'd be figuring out how to do this again, because that's what my experience has been.
Within the world of social justice and advocacy, who influences you?
Yeah, there've probably been, a number of people over the years. In particular in this work, a person who's been a really good mentor for us is Greg Paul, who started the Sanctuary in Toronto, which is a kind of a grown up version of a Greenwood Coalition in the right on the edge of the gay village in Toronto, and in a very very difficult neighborhood in terms of poverty and social concerns. And Greg wrote a few books about his experience, and has always been there as an encouragement to us. And so, having mentors like that have been really important. And the work that Christian Harvey has done in Peterborough with the warming room and at One City Peterborough now has been a great partnership where we've shared things back and forth, and we've each been each other's fans, and it's really important, I think, to have those kinds of folks in your life that know the shorthand to what you're doing, and can just pick up where you left off the last time and keep moving forward.
Do you think you moved the needle? Is the community a better place, a kinder place, more compassionate, more empathetic?
Yeah, I definitely, without question, we've moved the needle in this community. I think it's a little hard to see the needle right now, because of kind of how the world has shifted. I mean, the world isn't well, our community isn't well, and some folks are confused and fearful, and that's leading to polarization and negativity and stigma against people that are, you know, struggling in poverty in our community. And so that that part makes it difficult to see the good that has happened. But I'm continuing to see folks from what we call the community lane, the non-institutional folks, stepping up wherever they can, whenever they're called upon to do things, to the extent that institutions and governments are being, they've been able to step back and not do their job as well, because they're leaning so heavily on folks in the community for healthcare, you know, meeting the very, you know, basic needs of people living in an emergency crisis. And so, I see the change there, and the way that the encampment in Coburg has been cared for by people. I think that as I said earlier, I think that our approach has made it possible or provoked change in some of the more institutional or formal approaches in the community. There's some really good people working in different professional offices, and I see the compassion. I see the recognition of the humanity of people. I see the willingness to listen. I think that has changed, and I think there are actually some really good people working at the front lines or close to the front lines on that institutional side of the community.
As you referenced just a moment ago, there has been a lot of anger within the community over the encampment. How does that impact you personally when people are so angry and often point their finger at you or your organization?
That hurts, Rob. That certainly has been, you know, a lot of difficulty, you know, for us over the past couple of years. We've gotten to a place in our society where it seems to be okay to say just about anything about anyone in public, and it doesn't have to be based on facts or truth, and so that's really unfortunate. And we've pushed back against that a little bit. Maybe we could have pushed back further, but it's that's one of the big challenges, the sort of the politicization of you know, caring for humans is a difficulty now, and I think it's going to continue to be a difficulty. And I expect the social concerns to get worse before they get better, because all the signs that we're not doing well have been quite a few years in the making. The housing crisis that we have now, started 30 years ago, and policies have created this. So you're not going to turn that around this year. You're not going to get everybody housed this year, and so we're going to need to step in there in new ways. And I think the bit of hope that I have in that area is that people, more and more people are being touched by the social concerns of our community. They've lost someone in the drug world. They know someone who's homeless or about to be homeless. They know someone, or they themselves can barely keep up with what they thought was a normal standard of living. My hope is that recognition, once people have their eyes open to that, that they'll act on that, and they'll act on behalf of their community and bring about change, because it's possible, but there's got to be a will to do that.
I spoke with the Northumberland County Warden the other day. I asked him if the encampment achieved the goal of creating a grassroots debate about housing and homelessness, because I know that that was one of the objectives besides providing a place for unsheltered people to live. Do you think the encampment has done this?
Yeah, it's interesting. The encampment in Coburg is similar in many ways to encampments that have been the result of the housing situation in many communities and across the country. It's interesting that this particular encampment has some unique aspects about it. And one is that the first people there and the people who lived there through the winter had very close connections and had built a community and were able to advocate to some extent for themselves, where not every encampment unfolds in that same way. And that that first group of people had built significant relationships with neighbors in the community who, stepped in and made some things work. The accident of it landing on provincial property was another unique aspect of this. I don't think there are many encampments in Ontario that are on property owned by the province, and that may have been a factor in sort of how long this has been left there without being bulldozed, like some cities and other municipalities have done. So some significantly different aspects there. I think there's been opportunity for learning and opportunity for dialogue here. Unfortunately, the loss of credible media over the last few years has impacted the ability to have dialogue about things. And so the kind of dialogue that has emerged is yelling at people across the street, either literally or figuratively on social media, and people aren't able to become informed. People aren't able to hear reasonable arguments or debate points on various sides, and so that's an unfortunate situation that we're in. And unless we see more credible media, like you attempt to do with your work over all these years, unless we see more of that, I don't have much hope for community dialogue. Beyond meeting somebody for a coffee and having a conversation, at a wider level, it just seems to break down.
Where does the Greenwood Coalition go from here? I understand they're having an annual general meeting on September 25th. What's going to happen next? And can you tell us anything about the search for a new executive director?
Yeah. So I can't say too much because it's not really my business anymore. But I've offered myself as a resource whenever needed. What I know, and maybe, back to your question about, why now seems like a good time for Greenwood and myself to part. I think that we've got some really good people in place to make some good decisions. And so I feel good about that, and sort of trust them in the next pieces. There are difficult decisions to be made. There are also new opportunities. And as far as the question of executive director, I don't think there's any plan to immediately fill that role. That role can be filled in different ways. And so I think there's some good discussions going on right now. And I'm quite hopeful that some good will come from this. And the reason that I feel that some good will come from this is looking back over the years and what I've seen embedded in this community, embedded in the people of this community, is people taking different roles. There, you know, we've talked about the an ecology of a community, that there are different significant roles that need to be played, and there are people in those roles, and I was just one of those roles. There are other people with other gifts and abilities, and that's where, you know, my faith is in terms of the future of Greenwood, the future of the community, that that the wherewithal is there in our community to continue to do good things, to do better things. And I think it's going to be absolutely essential. I don't think that governments and institutions can figure this out on their own. And so it'll be critical for them to listen to the community.
Where do you go from here?
Well, that's a good question. I think my first thought is, having a little space to process things and to not commit myself to something else. I'm not expecting to head into retirement in the regular sense of the word. I think there are other interests that I have, so I will be thinking about those things and maybe learning some new things, and certainly interacting with my family in different ways. My wife Beth and I have four children that grew up in this community, and they have children, and that's a huge part of our life. So having a little more headspace available for my family will be important, and it's something that I've always enjoyed, and I think was healthy for me is writing of different kinds, and so I look forward to doing some of that as well.
David Sheffield, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rob.
That was David Sheffield, former executive director of the Greenwood Coalition. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.